We would love it if you would go to donate.npr.org/happy and support your local station and also support our show. We'll tell you more later. Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. Today we're talking about Steven Spielberg's latest movie, The Post.
The film takes place in Nixon-era D.C., and it's about the decision by the Washington Post to publish the leaked Pentagon Papers, a decades-long study of the United States' involvement in Vietnam.
Meryl Streep plays the Post's publisher, Katherine Graham. Tom Hanks plays its celebrated editor, Ben Bradley.
It's a historical movie that tackles big issues like government leaks, the importance of a free press, and being the only woman in the boardroom.
Spielberg finished the film in 9 months. He first read the script a few weeks after President Trump's inauguration and was determined to get the movie in theaters by the end of the year.
Right, but was it worth the rush?
That's what we're talking about today on Pop Culture Happy Hour. Before we get started, let's introduce the rest of the panel. You've already met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair is NPR film critic Bob Mondello. Hi, Bob.
Good to be here.
Good to have you back. Now, Bob, I want to start with you because The Post is on your list of your favorite movies of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about why you liked it so much.
I'm afraid to make too strong a claim for this movie. And I did like it. And it is in my, you know, my 10 best list always has 22 pictures.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So it fits in there towards the end. And it's a nice movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but I think it's sort of an important one at this moment. And that is why Spielberg made it. Here's my case for it. The guy decided he was going to make this really quickly. In theory, it should fit into the kind of movie like Lincoln or Bridge of Spies or something like that, which is a serious, realistic movie,
yeah,
as opposed to his other kinds of movies. And because he was making it quickly, he fell into a lot of tropes that he uses in other kinds of movies, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, like Jurassic Park. And I thought it was interesting how quickly he could do it, how well he could do it, considering that he had, you know, he picked up his cast in a space of about 10 minutes, and that it kind of is effective. I think it's also clear that he sort of wanted to make All the President's Men, and this is not that story. So he was making something else. What I like about it is that it does convey what it was like to be a woman back then in a position of potential power, being shunted aside by men.
Yeah. I think for me, that is the strongest part of the film is the Katherine Graham story and the Meryl Streep performance. Those were my favorite parts of it. Glenn, what did you think?
We've talked, you and I, Linda, about this film, and Stephen, we talked a little bit. So I think I'm going to come down somewhere between Bob and you guys.
Yeah.
I liked it, but look, this movie is the poster, right? Bob talks about how it has this indie feel, or at least it was made like an indie movie. It doesn't feel like that, really, to me. It feels like it's the kind of movie that comes out this time of year. It is a two-hour-long Oscar campaign. You do keep expecting the actors to stop what they're doing and turn to the camera and say, "For your consideration."
Yes. Yes.
It does suffer from Cold Mountain Syndrome, which is that every extra is a movie star. And the
Or a TV star.
Or a TV star, absolutely. Yeah. And the tension in this movie is very weird because the tension is with the Ellsberg character. The real danger is with the Ellsberg character. And the tension in this movie is more abstract. It's about principles. It's about the First Amendment. And it's about whether or not they sell the paper.
Right. I think to some extent it's trumped up.
Yeah.
And I mean, the problem with the movie, I think, I have done some reading since I saw it, including in Ben Bradley's autobiography. And he talks about this period in just one chapter, and he sort of breezes through it. And one of the things he does not talk about was this tension about selling the paper. And they make it sound as if this is happening simultaneously. And I think it was not. I think it was a sort of a, it happened over the course of a year. So they've got to get tension in there somewhere because you know that they ultimately publish the papers. That's not a spoiler, right?
The Vietnam War is not still ongoing.
Right. So they have to gin up some kind of tension, and I think what they decided to do was that, and whether Katherine Graham was going to, you know, man up. And in essence, she does, and it's a tense and interesting moment.
Yeah. The problem is, you know, you come up with the expression man up and then somebody does it wearing a caftan and
oh
it's clear
God.
That it's just not the right
a
expression.
A gold accented caftan.
Gold accented
So I was going to say, I have all these caveats about this movie, but at the end of the day, the climactic scene does feature Meryl Streep in a gold accented caftan. So as a gay man,
yeah.
I got to like it. I mean, I don't make up these rules.
Yeah.
But can we talk about Meryl's performance really quickly? I think it was, cover me here, Bob. As a fellow gay man, you have to watch my back. I thought it was really mannered. I thought it was really tick-ridden.
Interesting.
More ticks than a deer in Vermont.
Yeah.
But there's this one scene where she's in the boardroom, and she's feeling overwhelmed. So she doesn't just look at the person who's talking. She angles her entire body toward him and puts on her glasses and peers at them because she is trying to pay attention. She is trying to catch up.
Yeah.
And that is really effectively shorthand for I'm feeling overwhelmed. So
yeah.
Great performance, but yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about it, Stephen?
All right. Let's compare this movie to a couple of somewhat like-minded films. It's going to get compared to Lincoln because it's Spielberg, because it's a historical drama. Lincoln is a somewhat, I think similarly, somewhat stagey historical drama with this very kind of hypnotically compelling story at its center. To me, the performances at the center of this movie, you have Meryl Streep, who is, she's Meryl Streep. She's really good. You have Tom Hanks, who's kind of doing this weird accent. He's like, I gotta get that scoop. Like, that's all he's kind of doing. And I never, ever, for a minute, forgot I was watching Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. So I never got deeply into their characters or felt them as who they were. Mm-hmm. The other film to which this movie is likely to get compared, yes, All the President's Men is one, but I want to compare it to Spotlight, a Best Picture winner about the gathering of a gigantic story. And there are lots of character actors in Spotlight. There are a lot of really great performances in Spotlight, but Spotlight is a movie about a story. The star of Spotlight is this massive story that these people are putting together. And you see the gathering of evidence and lots of reportorial genius and risk that goes into collecting this story. To me, the core of the story is like someone else got the scoop. Now our role is to try to do the one tiny piece of reporting that would allow us to duplicate it. Mm-hmm. And then it's a lot of business about, like, will Katharine Graham get invited to DC cocktail parties going forward? Like, I don't give a crap. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And I do think there is a little undercurrent of this movie kind of saying, like, these people, Ben Bradley and Katharine Graham, have to get out of the mindset that they are part of, like, highfalutin DC social circles and focus on being a newspaper.
Yeah, I think there's actually a very good scene about that where he's talking about, he being Ben Bradley, talking about having dealt with Jack and Jacqueline Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Then after the assassination, realizing that he wasn't part of their circle, that he was this guy that they were inviting in because he gave good press. And it's an emotion-packed scene as it's played, and a very nice one, really. And it's the one place where Hanks kind of really comes into his own, I think. Mm-hmm. The problem with making this picture, if you were actually making a movie about the Pentagon Papers, you really ought to include the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's making a movie called The Post, which therefore has to be about the aspects that involve the Post. And that's different. The New York Times got the story that you're talking about researching it and getting all of that. That's that.
Right.
Right. You'd have to make that elsewhere. And I'm guessing, I don't know this, but I'm guessing that when the New York Times reviews this movie, they're going to point that out a lot.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. When you talk about the short timeline on which it was made, I feel like where it wasn't rushed, where it was fully realized, was in the execution of the idea once they had it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's beautifully shot. I think you have some lovely performances. I do think Meryl Streep is good in it.
Bob Odenkirk.
I think Bob Odenkirk is good in it.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like where it could have used more time was in actually figuring out the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt over and over during this film like we were not necessarily hearing the right story. I feel like Ellsberg is a more interesting story.
Yeah.
I feel like the New York Times is a more interesting story. I feel like the Supreme Court case is a more interesting story. And I feel like just staying with Kay Graham, not just during the Pentagon Papers, but this entire history of her life that they, you know, nod at and
right.
acknowledge but don't really tell you is a more interesting story. I've read her memoir, and
yeah.
it's extraordinary.
I really wish my mom were still around to see this because she she lived a lot of the things that Kay Graham is going through in this movie about being the only woman in the room, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And in this movie, the women are always on staircases. It was really mm-hmm. interesting. You're forever seeing them outside the Supreme Court, where she walks down a long row, outside the boardroom where all these important guys are that yeah. Kay Graham has to impress somehow. But let me say that you're right about the execution of it being pretty. I think what is fun about the execution, and the thing that I enjoyed in the movie, was how every once in a while you'd see the Steven Spielberg who made Jurassic Park. I mean, you know, when the presses rumble the the room. And the other thing, when they open the box with the Pentagon Papers, that's Indiana Jones. That's the Ark of the Covenant they're taking out there.
Yeah, I get that.
So I thought that was kind of fun, just watching him use tropes he knows works.
Yeah, I will say I wanted to piggyback on what you were saying about watching like the printing presses. There's a whole mm-hmm. bunch of like linotype machine yeah. stuff, a lot of old newspaper porn, and yeah. as
and pneumatic tubes.
And yes, yeah. and I am the son of a newspaper man. I have been a newspaper. I mean, it was The Onion, but it was still a newspaper. There were still mm-hmm. printing presses. I could watch that stuff all day. If this movie had been about linotype machines, mm-hmm. I'm all in.
Yeah, I keep talking about tension in this movie, and you know, this is not a thriller, obviously, but it yeah. should have some tension. And the only time my stomach clenched was when a character dropped some loose change and had to remember a phone number. And if that's where the tension in your movie is coming from. And yeah. I think I pinpointed one reason why. There's a moment in here where the character of Daniel Ellsberg is explaining to Bob Odenkirk's character about why he stole and leaked the Pentagon Papers. And he says, "Someone said this at some point about why we stayed when we knew we were losing. 10% was to help the South Vietnamese, 20% was to hold back the commies, 70% was to avoid the humiliation of an American defeat." Do you see how that undercuts itself? We have these hard numbers, which sound impressive, and the movie wants that to land.
Yeah.
But it begins with, "Someone said this at some point."
Yeah.
So what, I mean, what? Well, he's the guy who should know.
I think you're right. And what you're calling issues around tension, I felt was issues around stakes, right?
Yeah.
Right. Which are, you know, you want the stakes in this film to be, and I think Spielberg wanted the stakes in the film to be press freedom. But I don't think the actual threats to press freedom then or now were made to feel very real mm-hmm. to me. As Steven said, there was maybe more attention to how this was going to affect Katharine Graham socially than, you know, if there was a real risk of going to prison.
Right.
I don't think that was made real. And if there was a real sense that they might lose the paper, I think that's what the investor,
yeah.
I think that's what all the public offering shareholder business uh-huh. is about. And the idea that the people who are going to bankroll the paper or are supporting it financially might not support it financially. I think that they got tangled up in the scenes of what I think of as Spielbergian men in shirt sleeves working and talking about what to do, mm-hmm. which is a thing that I think he really loves to do. And you get a lot of it in Bridge of Spies, and mm-hmm. you get a lot of it in Lincoln, although the periods are obviously totally different.
Different shirt sleeves.
He is really fascinated by kind of groups of men in powerful institutions kind of working things through. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And it's sort of the way I felt about Bridge of Spies, which is he knows how to make movies. You can't look at the film and say he doesn't know how to make a film. But I think what it lost in the short timeline, perhaps, is the editing, not in terms of like the close editing of kind of screenplay where you take out a line here and put it in there, but a less rushed conversation about how should we tell the story and where should the focus be. It feels unfocused to me, and I wanted it to be more that one woman in the room story and mm-hmm. that people don't really trust her at the paper yet because they don't really know her yet and because she wasn't ever supposed to have this job.
Mm-hmm, right.
I wanted more of that, and I felt like it was unfocused in that way.
I really hear you. I mean, I get why, and the frustration, I would guess, for Spielberg, this is pure guesswork, is that he intended this to be about Trump and the freedom of the press and how the press is
yeah,
viewed
yeah.
today, and that is what kind of doesn't come across.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also had an issue throughout this film with the casting. And it's weird. I am often beating the drum for put comedic actors in dramatic roles because
sure.
comedy is harder than drama. So comedic actors are better than dramatic actors, so you should use them in dramatic roles. This is the case against that. Hmm. I mean, now, part of it is just, you know, I'm a comedy nerd or whatever, but I kept getting pulled out of the story by the presence of, like, here's Zach Woods, here's Jesse Plemons, here's Alison Brie, here's a scene with Bob Odenkirk and David Cross from Mr. Show acting together as reporters in the set, you know, so like I kept getting pulled out of it and just sort of expecting comedy to break out.
Right.
And I didn't necessarily think that any of those people, like Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, I never felt like anybody got really lost in their role.
Yeah, I think I would defend all those performances, I think, except David Cross, I have to tell you. I think, and I would defend all of those as demonstrated good dramatic actors.
I love all those
except
actors.
Except for David Cross, who I don't think has the kind of history in dramatic acting. Maybe not Zach Woods, but certainly Jesse Plemons and Alison Brie have both played dramatic roles
in the past. I love them.
I know.
It's not a cut on any of those
I'm
people.
Agreeing with you totally. I think David Cross is distracting in it. That's what I would narrow it down to for me personally.
The comedy variation on the Cold Mountain Syndrome, where you just recognize the face and it becomes the face.
Right.
I do want to give a special shout out to the actor Michael Cyril Crichton. He plays the dude who walks the box of Pentagon Papers into Ben Bradley's office.
Yes.
And then sits in the background and is kind of, he is so good.
That is a really interesting, very short appearance.
It's really good, right? He stands out. He totally stands out. He's from The Outs. He's from many different things. But he's great.
The thing that was funny to me about that sequence is, you know, we were talking about differences and similarities with Spotlight and also with All the President's Men. Those are reporting stories.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're process stories. And so it's not surprising to me that I sparked to that moment, which is kind of the process of trying to get the attention of the editor and the tension of holding in your hands something that you know is important and trying to figure out what to do. And also the sequences that involved kind of low-level delivery kids moving stuff from one place to another. That, to me, had tension too. So maybe it's just that when I felt like it was powerful people who had already been given, you know, everything they needed, just kind of trying to decide, you know, you're not going to get very far with me with the will Katharine Graham decide to defy her close friend who honestly she shouldn't have in the first place, probably. Like, I wanted the film to kind of, I wanted more of the scene with her and Ben Bradley, where you really realize that they are coming to terms with how compromised they are.
Yeah.
And if the film had been more about that.
I wanted much more of that.
And less about kind of their heroism in doing what I would consider, in to some degree, the least you can expect of journalists, which is not to give favoritism to their close friends. I think I would have liked it more. But Bob likes it, and I didn't not like it. It's just aggressively competent is what I is how I feel. And I don't mean that as nasty as it sounds.
Here's what I think is going to happen. This is a year, and we've talked about this about other pictures. I wonder what the front runner is going to be for Best Picture.
Win.
And as a compromise position, this might be a picture that an awful lot of people in Hollywood are not uncomfortable with. And I, you know, I have to say, I'm not uncomfortable with it. I think it's very well made. I think it is, you know, I mean, it's Hollywood filmmaking. It's the kind of thing that gets rewarded. If you're asking me if it should be this or I don't know what, you know,
Get
The Shape
out.
Of Water.
Get
or
Out.
Get Out, Lady
Get
Bird.
Well, I would love to see it be Get Out. I think that would be an amazing choice. I would be real surprised if Hollywood made it.
Yeah, I think I would be too. Well, we will be very curious to hear what all of you think about The Post. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. So it is time now. Oh, it's the best part of the week. Best part of my week. It's our favorite segment. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Recently gathered the whole family together to watch as many Christmas specials as we possibly could.
Nice.
We did our Frosty the Snowman. We did our Charlie Brown Christmas. We did It's Christmas Time Again, Charlie Brown. We did A Christmas Story. We even got desperate and put on the Kung Fu Panda holiday special that I was just maligning a few weeks ago because it's Christmas. And I pulled out my DVD copy of a show that Glenn has praised at great length at some point in the 7.5 year history of this show. A Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas special.
Yes.
Which Katie Presley had never seen before.
Oh my God, it's so good.
And so she's sitting there, she's starting to watch it kick off. She's like, should I sit down and watch this? Like, I like Pee-wee Herman. And I'm like, oh boy.
I've never seen that.
And so I'm kind of like trying to sell her on it quickly. Like, it's this, it's got that. Oh, and it's the gayest thing ever.
It so is. It so is. Coso is.
And I left it for her to discover things like cutting into the other room where there are all these shirtless construction workers.
Yup.
But the portion of the credits when she like covered her face with her hands and just started rocking back and forth at the accumulated awesome gayness of the opening credit sequence where he's like, Katie Lang, Little Richard, Joan Rivers, Grace Jones.
Grace Jones. When the Grace Jones appearance is the least gay thing in the special. It's amazing.
Doing this like Teutonic kind of 80s performance of Little Drummer Boy.
Yep.
Katie Lang just pantsing around to Jingle Bell Rock.
Uh-huh.
It is so incredibly awesome. At one point, she shouted out, I think how I feel about Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas special. She shouted out, I want to live in this.
Yep. Get in line, baby.
That is wonderful. As always, Stephen is happiest when he is making other people happy.
So, Linda, you seriously have never seen this?
I have never seen it, but I will now.
Oh, you gotta.
Bob, I will now.
I want to see it, too. I've never seen it. I hope I missed this.
We'll have a viewing.
Oh, my God. I love this idea.
Thank you, Stephen. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
I discovered this little indie song y'all probably never heard of, a little obscure little outfit. It is called Havana by Camila Cabello, otherwise known as Havana Unana.
Havana Unana. Hey. Half of my heart is in Havana Unana.
Hey. This song is huge around the world. It is particularly huge. I've been spending some time in Miami. It is pouring out of every restaurant and bar and car in Miami. It is pouring out of our apartment in Miami.
Nice.
Faustina listens to this song in the shower. And it's gotten such that it is so pervasive. This has a grip on the city right now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it is a song that I have decided we needed to take a break from because it is just too much. And then I saw the video. The video is so good. The video mixes telenovelas and Purple Rose of Cairo. It's funny. A little obscure little ditty called Havana by Camila Cabello. This video has made me fall in love with the song all over again.
Sounds wonderful.
Wow.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Bob Mondello, what is making you happy this week?
I went back and checked a bunch of movies that I missed during the summer that opened up. And one of them was a picture that our editor, Tom Cole, has been urging me to see for months now. And I finally went and watched it, and it's called Faces, Places. It is a documentary. I'm not usually jumping up and down over documentaries. And this one is Agnès Varda, who is one of the two remaining French New Wave people on the planet. And she's 89 years old, and she teams up with a 34-year-old photographer who takes pictures of people and blows them up to building size and then pastes them on buildings. And they go in search of the soul of France, just to find it. And they talk to people. And apart from the fact that seeing things like a woman's face covering her house, I mean, just completely being the house, and having this woman who is, she's a coal miner's daughter, and she's being kicked out of the house because it was her father's, and it was a project, and now they're tearing down the project, and she is staying there, and she has not left, and they take her picture, and they plaster it on her house, and she comes out in front of the house and looks at the house, and her eyes go wide, and yours will get bleary. It is the most gorgeous moment. It's just, oh my God. And there's hundreds of them in this movie. It's a beautiful film.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Bob Mondello. So this week I have sort of an obvious choice, but a choice that has been going around on the internet from an old favorite of ours, the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. If you did not catch up on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend this fall, it has really been a genuinely, and I mean this sincerely, a fascinating look at mental illness and at Rebecca's evolution of her thinking about her situation. But it also remains a show that will sometimes pull out a musical number that just stands entirely on its own. And recently it had one that was starring Paula, played by Donna Lynn Champlin. Mm-hmm. And she is in a supermarket and she sees an old boyfriend. And the old boyfriend is her first everything, as mm-hmm. she says. And so the musical number is named after the fact that he possesses the very first blank I saw. And I won't say it on NPR because, you know, even though it's anatomical.
Yeah, very anatomical.
It's anatomical.
I disagree with this.
I'm not going to say it in a recreational setting. Okay. But he possesses the very first blank I saw.
The first penis I saw.
First penis. Very first penis. First penis. Very first penis I saw.
And the song is basically an ABBA song.
Yep, yep.
And it is shot like an ABBA concert video almost. It is so brilliant. This show continues to have the ability to just create these spontaneously bizarre and delightful moments. You know, no show that has to crank out musical numbers every week hits a home run every time, uh-huh. but it still produces things that are unlike anything else I see on television. They delight me. They make me so happy. So if you have not seen it yet on YouTube, look it up. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the very first. Mm-hmm, I saw.
Uh-huh.
And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can follow Bob at Bob_Mondello. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band Hello Come In provides the in and out music you're bobbing your head to right now. Before we go, do not forget, head over to donate.npr.org/happy. Support your local station, support our show. It's been so wonderful having all of you here to talk about The Post. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Great fun.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.